Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Wednesday, which means it's time for the front three with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Hey guys, how you doing?
And of course, Dave O'Brien.
It's a goal!
One of you sounds happier than the other there. Lawrence, you sound a bit upset, mate. What's wrong?
Oh, no, mate, I'm all right.
Oh, you're all right. It's okay.
Yeah, I actually feel okay. However, tonight I went to the Echo Arena in Liverpool, which is like the big stadium in the city.
Yes, you were there.
10,000 people. To go and watch Liverpool in the Europa League final. Started so well.
Yes.
And Liverpool, but not necessarily because Liverpool were playing great, just because Sevilla weren't really doing it particularly good. And then Sturridge popped up with a moment of brilliance. And ultimately in the second, you can trot out cliches and stuff, but it was a game of two halves.
It was a game of two halves. It ended, of course, 3-1 to Sevilla on the night, winning the UEFA Europa League for a third time in a row. Absolutely sensational. But of course, you point out there, Lawrence, Liverpool were on top in that first half, all over Sevilla. They created 8 chances, Sevilla created 0. And in the second half, from that kickoff, was it 15, 16 seconds in, Sevilla won all up and the game completely changed?
I think it was exactly 17 seconds, wasn't it?
Incredible.
Basically Liverpool hit for 6. And, what was interesting was that in that time, there were so many handball shouts and sort of things. But I was sort of thinking, you know what, Liverpool, they can let that go. Don't play that way in the final. Don't worry about handballs, those kind of things. And you can sort of say that when it's going for you. But then in the second half, you sort of look back and think, God, I wish that maybe one of those had been called or, one of the bad calls had gone Liverpool's way. And ultimately, I know within a game you can't really complain about those kind of things. But, I think, basically James Milner said it post-match and I thought he was kind of right. Liverpool would be disappointed because they won't feel like they showed their best in the final. And I think that's what's disappointed the most. I think, I was saying to Glenn, the guy that I'm filming with for TFR, he said to me, how would you feel if you paid a grand to get into that stadium tonight? Would you really be happy with that? And probably not. But there's a couple of good, the difference for Liverpool is 2 finals in a season where they didn't expect to make it to a final like that. And not only that, but Jurgen Klopp and the positivity of that, I think are 2 things that Liverpool take away, really.
Of course, doubly disappointing, Dave, as Lawrence points out there, because they were 1-0 up and it looked like Sevilla were going to be the team who unravelled, really. They didn't look like the team who had never lost a Europa League tie under Unai Emery. But of course, in that second half, it all turned on its head. I mean, where did it go wrong for Liverpool? Where did they lose grip of this game?
Well, Dave, before you start, I'm pretty sure you nailed it, by the way, on TF3's preview, which is live on the YouTube channel still. You can go and see. Dave pretty much nailed it pre-match, the same as he did post-match.
I think that it's Liverpool did dominate in that first half. They were all over Sevilla. They were battering them, absolutely battering them. And if Liverpool had taken one of those chances that they presented to themselves in the first half, the game was over. But like you said, the coach deserves the credit, Unai Emery. What did he say to them at half-time? It was such a difference. Sevilla was so on the back foot in the first half. They were so defensive. They weren't playing the natural game. They weren't looking for Kevin Gamero long, and it completely changed. The first goal goes in. Vitolo starts getting on the ball, And Mariano, I know a player that I probably mentioned in the preview that he's very hot and cold. But if you get him on the ball in the right side of the pitch, he'll make something happen. You know, challenge him defensively. Liverpool should have been caning him all, the whole half. They should have been targeting Mariano on that left-hand side. Coutinho, get him 1v1. That's what Liverpool should have been looking at.
And not only that.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
You know, there was a line said by, I think it was Darren Fletcher, who's a commentator, and he sort of said, you know, the Sevilla coach will go in at half-time and he'll obviously say to his players, you know, you guys need to step it up. But not only that, it'll probably refocus them. And he'll probably focus them on another aspect of the game. And you know what? I think he focused them on all the right aspects of the game, the right areas to attack. And he basically noted down what Liverpool were doing. Not only that, but I think he said they trained for the idea that, Moreno was going to play at left back. And they instantly targeted that in the second half. And I was really impressed with that aspect, that basically, you know, what looked like a training ground move from kickoff was perfectly executed.
What did you make of Moreno, Lawrence? Because he took a lot of abuse on social media, not least from Jamie Carragher, who tweeted out and hastily deleted, "Jurgen transfer committee, anyone, sign a fucking left back."
Yeah, no, that's fair. But at the same time, I don't feel like Moreno had such an awful night. I know that one mistake kind of can define you at that level. And I agree, he's not maybe what Liverpool need. But at the same time, I don't feel that he deserves the vitriol that a lot of people are sort of pointing to.
He's not. He can't shoulder his entire defeat upon his shoulders.
There's so many cliches you can trot out after a final. And another one is this final did not change on just one moment.
Dave.
That is a big cliche.
I mean, Lawrence points to there the fact that, yes, it's disheartening for Liverpool, but and to not obviously qualify for the Champions League, but things are still looking up. Okay, yes, they didn't particularly give a good account of themselves, but it's a positive note almost for Liverpool to reach those two finals this season, to finish where they did in the league. It's all set up for next season to be much improved.
Yeah, I think 100% Hugo Moreno did take a lot of criticism. Four out of his four tackles in his own half, he didn't win, which is a bit of a criticism for a left-back. You've got to win those tackles, but what this does for Liverpool is it really gears them up in a way they could be favourites for the Premier League because they've not got any European football. Let me finish.
They're 9-1 for next season.
But what Liverpool have is a manager that's had half a season in the Premier League and done very, very well.
That's interesting.
Manager's adaptable, that hasn't had a window in the transfer market, that has evaluated all of his players and knows what his weaknesses are, a la the left back. You know, a bit of a criticism. Jamie Carragher potentially shouldn't have been throwing all the blame on the left back. A bit unfair, you know. There were other players in that team that didn't show up tonight, like we mentioned before, Coutinho, Firmino, Anonymous. You know, Daniel Sturridge was brilliant, I thought, absolutely brilliant. But what Liverpool have next season is they have a week off before most games. And we saw under Brendan Rodgers that Liverpool did very, very well in that situation where the same sort of players that are still in the squad, give them a week, give them a week of tactical, you know, analysis and then ways to set up to certain sides, did very well. So with a season with Conte coming in, Guardiola coming in, Mourinho potentially coming in, Wenger still being there, Liverpool have a very, very good chance of winning the Premier League just because they've not got European football.
Fantastic strike, by the way, tonight from Sturridge. A great moment of quality. I do think that's part of the problem is actually, you know, Liverpool were living on a wing and a prayer in the Europa League for, four games in a row? I understand you need some of that to get to the final. But at the same time, great run. And I think Liverpool will take away some great memories from this season.
Hare Solomon, the main man, writes in, now that the Europa League is gone, was Klopp's first season at Anfield a success or failure? Surely a success, Lawrence. It'd be harsh to say that was a failure.
Yeah, I know. I feel the same. Yeah. I don't feel like it's a failure, although losing two finals.
Pierre Tagala also writing in, he said, what sort of players will Liverpool now be able to attract considering the result of this final? Is Gerts the table?
I don't think it is. I think Gerts has probably got it's like Klopp has said, basically. He doesn't want players that only focused on Champions League football in the short term. He wants players who are committed to the club, etc. And I know that's probably putting a shine on things because that's what Jurgen Klopp does very well. I think he's probably got the targets, and those targets probably know that Liverpool are interested. I think they'll probably have watched what Liverpool did tonight and feel 50%, that's very disappointing. Can Klopp lead us anywhere considering his record in finals? But also look what that potential that side has and look at the great players they have, you know, Chan, Coutinho, Firmino, Sturridge. I think Chan probably needs a better midfield partner than Milner. That's not to put Milner down. Lovren at the back. Mignolet probably on his way out. There's a lot to be positive about there. You know what? I don't think Klein is had such a terrible game either.
I think the interesting thing with that is that what Liverpool missed in the final, in the second half especially, is an option on the counter-attack. And that is what Mario Götze did at Borussia Dortmund. It was an option. They'd play the ball to Mario Götze and then they'd break. And that was the beauty of Mario Götze, that he drifted into wide areas, he picked the ball up, and he's got that like close control that it's very rare in European football. You'd say it's likened to Lionel Messi, where he's got such great close control and he can create situations out of nothing. And it's something Liverpool needed. When Sevilla got the heads up, Liverpool didn't have anything on the counter attack. Daniel Sturridge was coming deeper. You want Daniel Sturridge further up the pitch. There was no one coming to the ball and then creating something. I agree with what Lauren said there. James Milner potentially isn't the right partner for Emre Can. Emre Can is a very, very good player, but I feel he needs someone next to him to dictate. And he can be the ball winner. He can be the aggressive player. Someone like Gundogan would sit next to Emre Can, and that is a very, very good midfield. So there's a lot of potential in this Liverpool side. Again, what I said before, if they sign the right players, there's going to be a big, big title push, and that is big for Liverpool. You know, not won the league since the Premier League was formed. That is big. That is bigger than the European Cup in a way. And that's good for Liverpool fans. And that's something that Liverpool fans can evolve to and get behind.
How about a word on Sevilla, Dave? Because, I mean, four Europa League finals they've played in now. They've won all four in their history. And it's three in a row, which is an incredible achievement. I mean, we had a lot of people writing into TFR Live tonight, and they were sort of downplaying this achievement, sort of saying, Europa League's a second-string competition, which is found ridiculous. Like, to win three of these in a row is sensational.
I just find it weird.
Weird?
It's crazy, isn't it? It's crazy that we are downgrading this tournament, the tournament that gets you into the Champions League. How much resource is spent getting to the top four positions in the Premier League is insane. Yet we throw the Europa League to the side because we're stupid. And inherently, that's what it is. Inherently, we are thick. And we think, again, going back to Lawrence's classic point, capitalist pigs that don't understand the fucking beauty of European football, don't understand the brutality of a UEFA Cup. And I tweeted it just after the game that this was the first time that a team's won three Europa Leagues in a row / UEFA Cups. That's incorrect. Apparently, a Juventus side did that as well. That is incredible. No matter what European tournament you win, if you win it 3 years in a row, you are an absolute brilliant side. But what's so interesting about Sevilla, you know, there's a great Guardian article this week about the director of football there that signed players for, I think it was like 22 million and won the Europa League. And then that squad went out for 160 million. Incredible. Sevilla are a model for a mid-table side that may not have the biggest stadium, may not have the biggest fan base, but they're doing an excellent job. You know, players like Krajovac, that is one of the best box-to-box midfielders in European football. Kevin Gamero, why he's not going to the Euros of France. Insane. In a way, I want France not to win the Euros now because Kevin Gamero's not in there. Lacazette's not in there. What are you doing? Two of the best finishers in world. Insane. But anyway, I'm moving away from the point, but I think that Europa League needs to be respected. We don't respect it enough. Manchester United don't respect it, and that pisses me off. Manchester United don't respect Louis van Gaal. They boo him when he's doing his speech. Fuck off. Sorry.
Good point. I like the passion.
Everyone can just fuck off, can't they?
Sorry, Dad. This game specifically, though, Dave, of course...
Sorry, Mum. Sorry, Dad. Sorry, Grandma.
Sorry, Dad. Grandma doesn't listen. She doesn't give a fuck.
As Lauren said, it was a training ground move for that first goal. And, of course, Liverpool pushing forward. Sevilla were absolutely ruthless on the counter after that. Probably could have had a few more. But they punished Liverpool.
Yeah. And, I think Liverpool were slightly naive, or at least they looked naive in the second half. Very disappointed that Liverpool played it in the way they did. Basically, I think I saw it.
I just want you to praise Sevilla, Lance. That's what I want. I want you to praise the opposition.
You know what else I also thought was Sevilla were fantastic in the sense that, you know, we obviously are defining them in England by that performance. They've been pretty good in other performances as well this season, not only in Europa League, but I think they've beaten some pretty big sides as well, haven't they? you know, it's not like they're just a one-off hit. You know, it's very, very easy to say.
They've of course had.
I'm also saying over the longevity of the season as well.
Yes. And they not only that, won an away game all season, which was giving me hope that Liverpool were going to pull something off here. But you know what?
They won an away game in the Europa League. That was just La Liga. They don't like travelling in Spain, but outside Spain, they're happy as Larry.
You know what, Lawrence? You know what? The point is, though, with them as well, they've also changed their squad so dramatically, like you say, Dave. And learning to cope in that way, I think there's something really fantastic about that, because, you know, a lot of the criticism of the Liverpool are, they don't make the most of their players, etc. They need to make more of them.
You go for just to jump in, just go from Carlos Bacca, who was one of the best forwards in European football last season, to Kevin Gamero. Respect. What we've got in the past, Frederic Canute, to Luis Fabiano. There's so many good strikers there. But then again, you've got to think about it. It's the system then, right? Ava Benega, a player that's on a free transfer and this season. It's just unbelievable. Whoever snaps up Benega has got one of the best sort of ball playing central midfielders in world football. Incredible.
The stat is that following this win, and of course with the Champions League final coming up with two Spanish teams competing, that means that Spanish teams have won all European Cups for 3 years in a row, which is pretty pretty damning assessment of pretty much every other European league on the
But you know what? This bloody Europa League run won't have done England's coefficient any worse. So that's good.
That's the plus. That's the plus we can take from this. Got to give a special mention to the main man, Varane.
Joshy. No, wait. This is good.
Yes, I put out the shout a few days ago. I wanted someone to set us up a subreddit on the Front of Three, because I thought, you know, this is a great place to build a community. We can sort of, you know, get the questions in, have all sorts of discussions going on. One man stepped up, and that was Varane Kuchel. Thank you very much, Varane. He has set up the subreddit, so get over there, reddit.com/thefront3.
Are there already people on it? Or
well, it's mainly me and Varane at the moment, but we're having a great time so far.
Adam, mate, I'm involved as well.
He's got himself as an admin on there as
Sounds like a party I want to go to.
So, guys, get in there, because I think it's going to be fantastic. But for now, Varane has asked, at what point do we... at what point do we start expecting more from Sevilla, Dave? It's a great accomplishment to win the Europa Free on the trot, but should we now expect them to compete more in the Champions League?
Good point.
It's a good, very, very good question, but again, I go back to what I was saying before, how because they've such a turnover of their good players that get sold, because they're a club, they've got to make money, again, going back to the small stadium, small fan base. Europa League is kind of their level. They played in the Champions League this season. They were in Juventus, Manchester City, and Borussia Mönchengladbach's group. That is a very hard group. To come third in that group is credit to any European side. They came third. They put in some good performances. To get back to Europa League and then to win it again, unbelievable. And I think that's what they should just focus on doing that, you know, winning that, you know, pushing further up the Liga. Like you said about the record away from home in La Liga, that's pretty poor. You know, they need to sort that out. But that comes with... They're a youth academy and so forth. You know, apparently they've sold over the last, 4 or 5 years, they've sold €100 million worth of players from their academy. That's incredible. That's an incredible system. Sevilla just needs to continue what they're doing and then look at it like maybe they won't win the Champions League in the next 5 years, but maybe in the next 10 years they might do. And that's what they've got to do. It's long term, right? If they win the next 3 or 4 Europa Leagues and keep improving, players are going to do...
That's 7 in a row, by the way.
Wow.
7 in a row. It's going to be big. Get your cash on that, lads.
So there you have it then. It finished 3-1 to Sevilla in the Europa League final. Disappointing for Liverpool, especially considering the position they were in. But it's not all doom and gloom for the Reds, we have to say, considering Jurgen Klopp is the man at the helm there. Moving on to some other news then. The England squad, the provisional Euro 2016 England squad, was of course announced on Monday, Lawrence. A 26-man squad, so there's a few surprises in there, and there's still 3 names to be cut out before the final squad is named. A few of the surprises, Jack Wilshere, of course, that was widely expected, but still a little bit surprising to see it in there. Marcus Rashford getting a call up, and Fabian Delph was a name that took a lot of people by surprise.
I know, right? Obviously, this is going to be trimmed down, so I feel like there's a couple of names in there that most people would instantly put on the list. It's basically about giving themselves options to look at and also looking at the comparisons to other squads. I feel like it does give Roy tactically something good that he can do at the Euros, but I think a lot of people are also expecting to see a lot more from this squad than maybe Roy has gotten out of them in the past. You know, obviously this cuts down, and I think it will be cut down to 23 that it seem a lot more reasonable than the 26. And for that reason, I'm going to have to say that I trust that Roy will get rid of the right guys.
The question is though, Lawrence, who are the right guys for you?
Well, I mean, we're going to find out in training, aren't we, Adam? Rashford's going for the training experience. Although, you know, why not give him a chance if he performs as well as someone else? You know, he's going to be keeping other people on their toes. I think the point would be that he's not going to offer the option that maybe you want from the bench, because you would hope that England weren't in that position. I think basically you have to look at this as a progression. But ultimately for Roy, it seems like almost the end of his time. And so because it feels like the end of a timeline, you feel like England should be doing more, but they're not. I think that's the disappointing side.
Dave, what did you make of his decision? In the initial squad, there's only three centre-backs. Now, maybe he was watching the front three preview on YouTube of the England squad. Go and check it out. But we made the point that, you know, Eric Dier, in as a midfielder, very versatile, can also play a centre-back. Do you think that's maybe behind his thinking, not bringing along, say, Phil Jones or Jagielka?
Yeah, I think he's definitely in his thinking. I think we'd mentioned that in the preview. But again, it goes back to the lack of quality centre-back for England. But again, what a question with that is that Derek Dier goes in there as the fourth centre-back. That's absolutely fine. I'd do that. I wouldn't play too many defenders there. You want to go, you know, further up the pitch, more flexibility. But then you question, who is the holder then? You know, we said Michael
Someone's
Carrick
in that role. Maybe Henderson.
Again, but we've seen Henderson do it well from times. But at the top level, John Henderson is a shuttler for me.
Is Delph
he shuttles
supposed to
that
be
wide, box to box? You know what I mean? Like, but by someone like Michael Carrick, who again has been in very, very good form. I criticise him. Talk about this year, Michael Carrick, man, get him in the squad.
No, I'm not having that. I'm not having Michael Carrick in the England squad.
Why, bruv? Who's your holder then, Adam?
Fabian Delph, mate. He's in there for a reason. He's played plenty of games this season. He deserves his name.
He deserves his name.
I understand what you're saying. But tactically,
you can't have a snake in the squad, Adam.
Very true. Very true. I just do not want to see Michael Carrick anywhere near this squad. I think he's had his time. I'd rather see Jack Wilshere in there, to be honest.
Did he? He's got like 23 England caps.
As in,
his time's not going
to
come
to get more caps, not as in he has he's sort of lived up to his potential. Do not want to see Michael Carrick there. I don't think we've seen before that he can't cope. I don't think he's got the pace. I don't think he's got the
Gareth Murray can't cope. Michael Carrick has never had to cope.
Get Barry up, mate. No, I don't want to see Carrick anywhere near that squad. I think, as it is, I wouldn't take Rashford. Seeing as we've got a cut out three names, I wouldn't take Rashford. I probably would cut out Delph, to be honest, because I don't think he's necessarily deserving of a place in that squad. And Jordan Henderson's fitness, obviously a question mark, but obviously if he's fit, I'd keep him in. Maybe Andros I'd cut out as well. But at the same time, he does offer that pace that does seem to be lacking elsewhere in the squad.
I keep Townsend in just because he's hit a little bit of form and he offers something else. So I think I'd cut Delph.
Yeah.
I think I'd cut Rashford.
Yeah.
And then I think I'd cut another one of those central midfielders. I'd keep Danny Drinkwater in 100%.
Maybe Wilshere. Would you cut Wilshere or
Lallana? Yeah, it'd be Wilshere or Henderson, to be honest. Whoever's going to be fitter. Whoever looks fitter in that training session, you know, both are coming back from injuries. Well, Jack Wilshere's a little bit, you know, earlier than Henderson, but there's one that's there that you've already got quite a peripheral of talent. And I think Danny Drinkwater has to start for me.
What about
Lallana? He's been so good this year.
Do you think Lallana maybe is in danger? Because I feel like everyone else can play a specific role, or they're very versatile, so they can sort of play a number of roles. Adam Lallana.
See, I think Lallana makes it in because of the university.
I kind of agree.
Where would he play in, say, Roy Sapp?
I think he'd play advanced. I think he'd sort of play. I think Roy will have been impressed with what he's seen from Lallana under Jurgen Klopp, weirdly, because actually at times it's not been good enough. In fact, at most times, I think it's not been good enough. His work rate has been good. The overall product of that hasn't been good enough. But I think Roy will have been impressed by that work rate and the fact that he can apply himself to a task that he's given. And more than anything, I think that's probably what Roy wants, is someone who can apply themselves to the task and say, right, this is how I'm doing it, and do it correctly. Because it very often, that is what you find with England players, is sometimes their heads drift. At least with him, he stays focused on the task.
Remains to be seen then. We'll see who gets cut out. As I said, three names need to be cut out before the final squad is announced. 23-man squad for the Euros, of course. A few other squads being named around Europe. Spain, a notable one, Dave, leaving out Diego Costa, Fernando Torres and Juan Mata. Personally, I find it hard to disagree with leaving out any of those three. Maybe Torres has got a shout, but this caused a bit of a storm, particularly with Chelsea and United fans, of course.
I think that Juan Mata and Diego Costa don't deserve to be anywhere near that squad, but Fernando Torres does. Okay. Fernando Torres has hit some real form. Fernando Torres is a type of striker that, when he's in form...
Can you stop calling him his full name?
When Torres is flying, Torres is flying. He's a very clean finisher. He knows how to, in those areas, he knows exactly what to do. And I'm a bit annoyed. I love bringing Ederiz in. I love bringing Morata in there, two very, very good strikers. But having Fernando Torres in there as well, you know, it gives Spain the option. I reckon Spain are going to play like Barcelona, but what Spain should do is take the Atletico model. They've got Sol on one wing, Koke on the other wing, they've got Busquets and Iniesta in central midfield. Play someone, you know, play Ederiz, a target man next to either Torres or Morata. Then you've got your back four that you're laughing about, Ramos, Pique, Alaba, and, you know, if you want to play on the right with Azpilicueta or whoever. That is a very, very good team, but without that, trying to be Spain of 2-3 years ago, that would be absolutely disastrous. There's so many teams out there that can hit you on the break. Belgium, destroy you on the break. Germany, destroy you on the break. France, destroy you on the break. Arguably England. If England play that right, they're going to kill people on the break. And I feel this Spain team seems to be geared to what they did 2 years ago, where they need to move on and adapt to Spanish football. Like we were saying before, how Sevilla have done so well in the Europa League, like Villarreal have done so well domestically. Why? Because they're adapting to it. They don't have the resource that the big boys do, like Barca and Real have. So they have to be more competitive. And that is the beauty of Spanish football. Yes, in the Premier League, we've got all this money. But because in La Liga, there's not enough money deep down, they have to get more competitive with the coaching, with the style of play, with hitting people on the break. And they know how to do that. And that's why Spain have got to go that way. And if they don't, they're going to get smashed. They might even not get out of the group. And that would be embarrassing for Spain.
And I think that's the World Cup, as it were.
Getting away, that Spain haven't moved on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, this is longer. Well, I was saying 2 years, so they haven't moved on for 4-6 years, which is incredible.
Everyone pile on Spain now. Dave's tipped them to do badly.
Hey, he was right about Slaven Bilic.
Slaven Bilic is going to get sacked next season.
What about Germany, Lawrence, obviously announcing their squad? Funny to look down their squad and see that they've literally only got one striker, which is Mario Gomez. A lot of midfielders, a stacked midfield in there. A lot of people pointing to that as the weakness. But, you know, you've got Thomas Müller. You could potentially play out front. Fill in that role.
Yeah, they'll play false nine. They'll play a load of false nines in there.
They've got enough of them.
They've got about 50 of them. It screams depth, that midfield, doesn't it? And I also feel like a lot of those players within there are good enough to score goals. You know, they've got potential to score the right kind of goals as well. And I just feel like there's not really much worry. But the difference is that there will be a few teams that will sit back and sort of say, go ahead, break us down. The difference is with Germany, when you say break us down, a lot of the time they do. Although you would also say they've been frustrated by sides because they haven't had maybe that classic striker that they've needed sometimes.
Italy have also named their squad. It's a 30-man squad, this one, for Antonio Conte, Dave. So a lot of names to get cut. Maybe that's why Fabio Barini has made the cut. No Andrea Pirlo, though, or Sebastian Giovinco from the MLS. So a little bit surprising. Maybe Giovinco has been on fantastic form. Italy don't look to have the strength, perhaps, that you'd expect them to have or want them to have to get further in this competition.
So I think with Italy, one big thing that we've got to look at is that they've lost the likes of Verratti and Marchisio, who've both been taken down to some pretty terrible injuries that have taken them out of the tournament. Italy are going to be so fresh, though. You know, you've got players like Riccardo Sampoerna, I think that's the correct way to say it, from Empoli, who's been absolutely brilliant this season, who've been linked with so many clubs in world football. A player that could step in and be that type of man, the ball player, which, again, it's so great. I think with Italy this tournament, we're going to see a load of players explode. Players like Insigne, who has been second fiddle to Gonzalo Higuain at Napoli, but been excellent on the ball.
Oh,
who's that in the background there, Dave?
I'm staying late at the squawker office. And I've been office. I need to lock up. That was it.
Dave, how many times have you slept at the squawker office?
Zero times, Lawrence. I wish I'd say
too many times.
Okay.
Let's move on to a little bit more news then away from the Euro 2016 squad. Aston Villa will be sold to the Recon Group after Randy Lerner, the owner, agreed to sell the club to the company's CEO and chairman, Dr. Tony Xiantong Jia.
Easy for you to say.
Thank you very much. So the number's been thrown around, I believe, at 80 million for Aston Villa. Good news for Villa fans, Lawrence.
It's a fraction of what Randy Lerner would have thought he was going to get for it, though, originally. I mean, I remember what they thought they were going to get. And now, you know, that club could have been worth so much more. But he's basically mismanaged it into having to sell it almost.
I mean, it's hard to disagree with that, isn't it, Dave? He's almost cutting his losses here, Lerner. He ploughed a lot of money into the club in the early days, of course, when Martin O'Neill was there, to, you know, arguable success. It's been downhill ever since O'Neill left, really. And now, rock bottom, playing in the Championship. Doesn't seem like they're going to return anytime soon. Maybe it is the time for Lerner to just sell up.
I think he was a businessman and he wanted to make this Aston Villa team worth more than it was. And he did well under O'Neill because of Martin O'Neill, not because of Randy Lerner. And he's pissed his money up the wall for the last three, four, five seasons. Quite frankly, deserves to make a loss from this because he's not run a football club the correct way. Aston Villa fans, you know, I like Aston Villa as an institution, a club with great history. Very passionate in the you know, in Birmingham, in the middle of England. They've been massive. You know, it's unfair. And I spoke to a Villa fan today. You know, what have they done right in the last few years? You know, players like Jack Grealish that potentially has done too much of something that we don't want to mention on the podcast. But why has nobody sat him down? Too much fun. Why is Jack Grealish had too much fun? Yeah. Who's not sat him down and said, look, Jack, you can either be a Lee Hendry, who again was the most talented player of his generation. Lee Hendry.
He's now making tons of money out in another country, mate. So you're the fool.
Lee
Hendry could have been the next Andre Pirlo for England. Let's put it like that way. Very, very talented, but was too, you know, pushing on the party scene. And that's the issue with players like that. And then it emphasises what Randy Lerner is doing. He's trying to take this and make it better than it is. And at the end of the day, he's forgotten his basic principles of Martin O'Neill. That was a team that worked very, very hard, fought for each other, had players like James Milner, Ashley Young, Gareth Barry, fighters, players like, you know, Emil Heskey in a way that gave a shit. And that's the problem with Aston Villa. Nobody gives a shit. And now they're in a situation where potentially they could go back-to-back relegations if they don't get a new owner and sort themselves out.
Right? Hopefully with this new owner, they'd avoid that. Because as you say, a big historic club, and hopefully we'll see them at least attempt and challenge to make a return to the Premier League next season. Moving on, though, Lawrence, John Terry has signed a new one-year contract at Chelsea. There's a bit of in and all sorts of dodgy negotiating in the press and all this sort of stuff. He has got that one-year deal, though, so he will be there for at least one more season. There was talk of sort of a new role for him if he did sign that contract. Nothing confirmed yet. But it looks like maybe he will be a one-club man.
yeah, good for him. Eh? Everyone's happy to see John Terry remain in the family.
Everyone loves John Terry, likeable chap.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, likeable guy. But it's probably a good thing for Chelsea that he remains a one club man, because marketing wise, it's fantastic for them. Yeah. Good for John Terry as well. As much as he's done bad by other people,
it's a difficult. It is one of those situations. I mean, we've seen the same thing with Totti at Roma, where a player almost.
It's very different with Totti, though, isn't it? Because Totti's always tried to represent the club well.
Yes, okay, not in. I don't mean like for like everything is exactly the same, but I mean in terms of a player.
I suppose everyone's got a skeleton in their closet. But I mean,
terms of quite clearly a player the club is trying to move on or would like to try and move on to bring in that next generation, the new phase. But it's difficult to move them on when the fans are so clearly attached and they're so beloved by the fan base. Totti, of course. Was it second only to the Pope? Maybe above the Pope in terms of popularity. Yeah,
I do sort of have to say though that there is a bit of a weird side. The weird bit sort of comes with everyone's like, oh yeah, you know, this is fan power, and you're like, yeah, no, not really. It's really just money and negotiations between people who already have a lot of it.
No, but I'm not saying it's fan power. I'm not saying it's the fans that got John Terry signed, but I'm saying it is an interesting situation in terms of the fans quite clearly want him to stay. The club would be quite happy to move them on, but it's almost a political play. I'm sure John Terry is not going to play a big part in Chelsea's season next year. Neither will Francesco Totti, but they're still agreeing that deal almost to maybe placate the fans, especially in Chelsea's case. It's been such a dismal season, the worst defence by a champion ever. This might be a kind of a token gesture maybe by the ownership to, okay, let's give this to the fans. We don't really want to give it. Quite clearly they don't when they're negotiating and agreeing a deal after the season's finished. It's not like they're desperate to keep on John Terry. And the same with Totti.
I do think also, though, they probably see the merits in keeping John Terry.
Interesting. I'd be interested to know what Antonio Conte's thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He apparently sanctioned this.
Well, I mean, I suppose you do want someone that sort of, you know, keeps some of the club's heart or what people believe is the club's heart. What I often feel is that people are maybe a little bit. And so every John Terry and Steven Gerrard both come from generations where clubs sort of had a mediocre level of success. They sort of had a mediocre-ish squad and they were obviously good players, right? But at the same time, you sort of think maybe it's an idea that you leave those players where they were. And I understand, you know, the ideas of loyalty and people playing for their clubs, but those guys at times have let their clubs down a little bit. I don't mean in performances on the pitch. You can never really do that as long as you try very hard. I mean sort of off the pitch. And maybe they don't actually embody what the club values are. Maybe that does muddy the waters a little bit. Because trying hard is, there's more to it for me.
I feel like Chelsea have stuck by John Terry through thick and thin and some pretty bad situations, though. So,
do you think?
Yeah. Another man who's beloved by the fans, of course, Rafa Benitez. Dave, looks like he's close to agreeing to stay on at Newcastle, beginning to work on his list of transfer targets, so the Daily Mail reports at least. It's going to be good news for everyone on the Tyneside.
I think so. You know, someone like Rafa Benitez. Sorry.
Dave is in a war zone. Carry on, Dave.
It's dangerous, lads. There's gunshots going off. Yes, fires being put out. East London is rife at the moment. Rife with danger.
I don't know what the word rife means.
But I feel with Rafa Benitez, there's also danger. And they're going down to a very competitive league. You know, teams like Brighton that have lost the playoffs recently. A very, very good side. So with Benitez dropping down, if he's got his transfer targets and he keeps the squad that he can keep, he'll do all right. But it's a danger for him. Not his ego, but his reputation has taken a bit of a hit, losing the Real Madrid job, being relegated with Newcastle, although that he did turn Newcastle's fortunes around. It's going to be interesting to see whether he can keep players like Mitrovic. That'll be crucial. And Mitrovic will kill the championship. Very physical. Doesn't mind a scrap. Players like Wijnaldum might go, but you've got players like Townsend. If you keep them in, Jonjo Shelvey, that is a decent core. And Tim Krul in goal, you don't imagine he's going to leave after being out all season. Who's going to sign him? Probably nobody, because he's had that injury record. So If Benitez can sign the right players and do the right thing, he'll kill the championship. But he's just got to be wary that there's a few sides, Derby. You know, they're a team that, in a way, shouldn't be in the promoted this year because they sacked their manager when he was in the top three, which was pretty stupid. But it's going to be interesting how he adapts to this level of football, in a way, and how he beats teams. It's going to be cracking because he's a clever guy. I feel that he will get that like edge.
It kind of makes sense, Lawrence, doesn't it? Because, I mean, at the end of the season, the fans were obviously serenading him throughout the whole win over Tottenham. And he sort of said, you know, my heart is telling me to stay. Now, a lot of people would point to the fact that, you know, he was managing Real Madrid at the start of the season. Now he's managing Newcastle. It's a bit of a drop. But I feel like if you take ego out of the equation, and you do look at it from a certain point of view, Rafa's a man who was he's never really been loved by any club and taken to their heart since he left Liverpool. So yeah. When you look at that from that point of view, why wouldn't he stay at Newcastle, a place where he's almost a god already? Why wouldn't you stay and be beloved by the fans? Yes, you're going down to the Championship, but if you take ego out of it and that sort of view, it makes sense.
Well, exactly. In the rest of the world, there is a realistic view, which is, like Dave has just said, it's a very tough league to go down to.
Mm.
I think it's all well and good. So, you know, it's almost like young love in a way. You sort of go, oh, that's very sweet. Yeah, stay together, be loyal to each other. I mean, to some extent, that is the issue. It was kind of where I was taking that. That's the issue is with Rafa a little bit is, you know, he does very much want to be loved because I think, you know, he feels misunderstood and he has been misunderstood in the English press at times. At the same time, I do think that people patronise Newcastle a little bit and sort of think, well, is this the best you're going to get, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow.
Don't get me wrong. It is. It's a really great relationship.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's something that says danger to me about that match of Rafa Benitez and Newcastle. It's a lovely match. But at the same time, I feel like there's a lot of people sort of gunning for both sides that don't necessarily want it to go well. And to me, the Real Madrid side is almost a misnomer because it doesn't really... you know, he was obviously let down there, and in many ways he probably would still be there if he hadn't have been so let down by some of the things that had happened there politically.
Let's finish.
Danger. Stranger danger.
Danger. Just like East London. Let's finish on a little bit of transfer news and a few questions before we wrap things up for this week's podcast. A little bit of interesting transfer news around Bournemouth, Dave. Callum Wilson has been linked to the move away. West Ham and Tottenham both interested. Bournemouth have already rejected a deal of £25 million for both Callum Wilson and Matt Ritchie from West Ham. They've rejected that one. Now, can you see why clubs of the calibre of West Ham, Tottenham, top six clubs, are aiming for Wilson?
I think that he's a very interesting striker, a striker that scores goals, it's a physical threat, very, very quick in behind. I think that there's definite interest that you're a very young player that's hit the top level at a very good time in his career. You know, we're coming into not, you know, pre his peak in a way. You know, a peak striker is going to be 27, 28. You know, he's before that, which is interesting. So with Matt Ritchie, was a player that, you know, luckily enough, my mum and dad live in Bournemouth right now. And I went to go and see Bournemouth in League One and in the Championship. Who was the player that stood out? It was Charlie Daniels. Oh. It was Matt Ritchie. And Matt Ritchie was just a player that you give him the ball and he makes something happen. And again, that's why it's so attractive because he gives you something else. He's like an X factor, playing wide. He'll do a very, very good job defensively because he's been coached by Eddie Howe for the last few years and he'll give you something else going forward. So 25, 30 million for both of them, that makes sense to me. That's a clever move. But if they don't get it, then fair enough. You know, I think West Ham, they had a bid rejected for Lacazette, €31 million.
Yes,
again, a very, very, very clever move.
If
they can pull one of those moves off, whether it is £40 million for two or maybe £40 million for Lacazette, fair play to West Ham.
They've also made a £31.5 million bid for Michy Batshuayi as well. Desperate for a striker, West Ham. Desperate to make the move early, which is potentially...
I think it's about the desperate... you can smell desperation sometimes.
Before the Euros are coming up, it's sometimes smart to try and force some business before the price tag inflates somewhat, I'd say.
But you also sort of think, well, you know... I'm always sceptical of their ownership. And there are times where I think... are you guys doing this to make it look like that's, you know, to kind of start the rumors that that's the level of club that you are? Because I suppose it is partly about punching above your weight until you get there. And, you know, those I think those guys are looking, I do think they're looking to convince people that they can compete at that level. But until someone actually sort of takes them up on that, kind of got to say they're not competing at that level.
We'll see. I think, well, you know, West Ham are ready to move to that next level now. They got bargain, obviously, last summer in Dimitri Payet, and I'd expect them to make these sort of moves now. The new stadium's coming. Cash is a flowing, as they say.
Really, so is.
Things are looking up. Speaking of Dimitri Payet, Dave, now, here's a spurious transfer rumour to get your teeth into. Apparently, Manchester United want to buy James Rodriguez, and as such, Real Madrid want Dimitri Payet to replace Hammers. Now, how much would you put on this one, I think?
Well, I think I'd put 5 Dimitris out of 5 for this one.
What? As in, 5 means it's happening, mate. It means it's happening.
No, all right, it's on. It's on. But right. It's brilliant. You know, a player like James Rodriguez is very unhappy at his role at Real Madrid.
That one I can see.
Doesn't look like he fits in at all. Man United probably need an attacking midfielder under Mourinho. You think he's going to play a 4-2-3-1. Needs a central player that scores goals, that can press well. James Rodriguez would be a very good target. Griezmann would be a very good target. But Dimitri Payet to Real Madrid, that's the crazy part of it, I think. Yeah. That is the nutty part. But again, you look at his record in the last few seasons, the most creative player in European football. It wouldn't be mad, but then again, why would Payet want to from play again? That's why West Ham is so attractive, because you're going to play week in, week out, and you're going to be in a European competition, and you're going to be playing for, you know, being in front of what, 60,000 people, 50,000 people. It kind of makes sense that Payet would want to stay, not go to Real Madrid. And with players like Lucas Vasquez at Real Madrid that needs to kick on his career, it just, the move doesn't make any sense to me. But James Rodriguez to United, maybe.
Don't buy myself. Finally, let's end on the news that Leicester have been dismantled already, Lawrence.
Nope.
N'Golo Kante wants to join Arsenal. He's leaving. He's off. He's told the Daily Express, and they're reporting it. He went literally to their offices. I'm joining Arsenal, lads, he said. And that's
if you're going to go anywhere.
Why would you go to Arsenal, though? I mean, is it money? Is it because you feel they can maybe compete on a high level? People are already writing off Leicester for next season, though. They're not going to win the league. They're not going to finish in the top four. I think a little bit of that has seeped into Kante. Maybe a couple of other Leicester players' thoughts that this is as good as it gets. Let's leave on a high.
Yeah, maybe. And at the same time, it's probably that those guys feel maybe that it's the only time they're going to be able to push for a deal. But again, maybe that's part of it, is I suppose if they also seen the summer plans or all those kind of things, or sort of what can we do after this, I'd imagine there's an element of, maybe it is time not to jump ship, but to make the move that's right for the individual player. And at that point, you sort of think, see you then.
And it sells papers.
You don't want a player that doesn't want to be there, let's put it that way.
That's true. That's a very good point. Hopefully they won't lose too many of these players, though. Hopefully maybe Mahrez or Kante, one or the other, and they can sort of keep the rest together.
Well, and the team that did particularly well tonight, and another team that's done particularly well in the Premier League, and a number of sides this season have managed to do high turnover of players and still do well. So, you know, let's see. Because essentially, you know, what Ranieri did was work with a group of players he hadn't really come into contact with before, but had been gelled by a previous manager, added a few elements to that. Let's see if he can do the same again.
Let's finish on a handful of questions before we wrap things up. Roman Oseguera tweeting in, who would you prefer to have in your teams as a promising young player? Iheanacho or Rashford? The eternal question. Lawrence, we'll come to you first.
I like Iheanacho. I like watching him. I find him very exciting. But I was really buzzed by Rashford. I'd have to go for Iheanacho, though, just because I feel like he'd lead the line and he's the kind of player I want in my team.
Dave, I guess you're going for Rashford.
Bloody typical. The bloody Liverpool FC firm pushing Lawrence into a corner and making him make a decision. For me, the talent is... There's one player that's got skills, One player that can create something out of nothing, one player that can score goals, another player that's in a Manchester City side that is average at best in terms of what he's doing there. Rashford has scored goals in big games, the Champions League, the FA Cup quarter final, scored against Manchester City, scored twice against Arsenal, has talent, has real talent. He scored 5 goals in the Premier League from just 8 shots on target. The guy is a genius, and that is it. Iheanacho is a player that will fit into potentially a few Manchester City systems. Rashford is a player that potentially could explode.
Okay, interesting stuff. We've got another question here. From the main man, Morgan Ryan 23. What players do you want to see out of your clubs? And he suggested Fellaini, Moreno, and Mason.
That is a great list.
It's pretty good. I mean, I feel like it's a pretty bang on list. Question.
Nailed it. Yeah, he's nailed it.
I like Mason. He's a decent player, but I felt towards the end of the season when he sort of stepped in for Dembele that he couldn't quite cut it. That's not necessarily his fault, but compared to Dembele, he looked lacklustre. I don't necessarily want him out of the club, but you know. There may be upgrades out there.
He's kind of like Jess Lingard, that he's very good at what he does, but he's just a bit weak.
Yeah,
but nothing. He hasn't filled out. Yeah. He's not become a big lad. He's just going to consistently be a very skinny, small lad.
It's not like Ryan Mason is particularly like young. He's 24, which I mean is young, but in terms of a footballer, it's not, you know, he's not just bursting onto the scene or anything. I don't know how old Jesse Lingard is, to be honest.
Well, Jess Lingard, say similar, 2024.
Right.
In a way, you've got to be hench before then.
You've
got to be bigger. If that's your job, if your job is to kick goals and do goal passes, you kind of got to be bigger than that, right?
Hench goals. Let's finish off then. Seeing as we started with the Liverpool losing in the Europa League final to Sevilla, Charlie Walsh writes in, which English team will be the next to win a European trophy and which one will they win? Which English team is going to be the first to win the next European trophy? The obvious answer is, of course, Manchester City, with Pep being there next season. A lot of people's tip to win the Champions League. But, of course, a bit of a semi-final specialist at Bayern Munich, so that may hold him back. What do you reckon, Dave? Who's going to be the next English club to win a European trophy? Leicester City,
It pains me to say it, but I think Liverpool.
Really?
I really do. I think Liverpool, you know, maybe they're obviously not going to be in Europe next season. But the season after, whatever Klopp does, I think that it's time. Especially with Jürgen Klopp, it's a strange one. He's lost 5 finals as a manager, and that's quite a bit. His win rate there isn't great, but you'd imagine him to evolve. He's a type of manager that takes things like that on the chin and thinks, how can I do better? And that's why I kind of think Liverpool might be the next ones to win a European, because, again, Barca are going to be strong. Bayern Munich are just unbelievable. Sevilla are going to, like I said about Sevilla, dominating, they're going to win 7 Europa Leagues, aren't they? And 4 are going to come in the next 5 years, so it's kind of had to have that pipe, right?
Lawrence, who's going to be the next English team to win the European trophy?
Good question. I'm going to go Manchester United in the Europa League.
Oh, no.
Shit. I think it's going to be... good question. I'm going to go Man City with Pep Guardiola.
Yeah, it's the obvious answer, but it's a good answer. Guys, that brings...
You asked my opinion, and then when I give you something...
I said the same thing, so I'm not giving you any shit there, right?
Adam, stop booing Lawrence. He's part of the podcast as well.
Guys, that brings an end to the Front Three podcast this Wednesday. Thank you very much for listening. Adam, if you enjoyed the podcast, remember to rate and review it on your podcast app. It helps other people find the podcast. And of course, we enjoy reading your kind words, which gets them up for comment of the week. Comment of the week, though,
that
has to be.
Ego boost really helps us make a podcast.
I do have to give comment of the week, technically not a comment, but I do have to give it to Varun Kushal, who set up our Reddit. Over and check out that subreddit. Lad.
Technically, that's like the ultimate comment, because it's the ultimate comment which sets up lots more comments.
Yes, big effort.
He's like the comment playmaker, isn't he?
I think it could be a great place.
Like Eva Benega against Liverpool.
Exactly. It could be a great place to kind of, you know, all chat together, get your questions in. We can get discussion points down there. I think it'd be a great place to sort of build a front-free community and be the whole, as it were. So get over there and check it out and let us know what you think. Until next time, though, Lawrence, where can the good people find you?
Go find me on the Football Republic Snapchat. Adam.
Ooh, very good.
It's looking pretty good right now.
Very good plug. I'm going to check that out after we finish recording here. Dave, where can the good people find you?
So go on to a site called Reddit. So REDDIT, and then search the classic, the front three, and you'll find this brilliant community that we're going to create. We're going to make something special on Reddit. Reddit is a beautiful place.
This is just the beginning, guys. Get in on the ground floor.
And this is just the beginning. Exactly. You're the first adopters. That's big.
Adopters. Guys, thank you very much for listening. Yeah, you can find me on Reddit at the front three as well. Until Sunday, we'll see you then. I think Sunday we'll be doing a little post FA Cup final reaction day. Maybe we'll do a little Premier League review, the player of the season, the moment of the season we were talking about last week as well. I think we'll have time for that next week. And we'll also be answering your questions, of course. So get them in on Twitter at the front three. Until
tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Sunday night, guys. Have a great week and we'll see you then.
Bye.